Hey everybody, it's Brock Polk, and I want to thank you for listening to this message from Heritage Church of Christ. We would be thrilled to share more content like this with you and make it easy for you to share it with others. You can find more messages like this on our podcast, or you can download our smartphone app by searching for Heritage Church of Christ in your app store. But most importantly, I hope this message encourages you to take a next step toward a thriving relationship with Jesus. Enjoy.
So I wonder, as you look back over the course of your own life and your own experiences, that maybe like me, you've noticed sometimes you have to learn things the hard way, right? Have you seen this in yourself? I felt really sorry a few months ago for a woman in San Antonio that showed up in the news, and her brother had invited her out to his house in the country, and she went out there and was kind of tromping around out in the pasture, and while she was out there, she found a couple of kittens that she thought had been abandoned. And so she, being an animal lover, decided that she was going to bring the kittens home and try to nurse them back to health and try to just, you know, keep them safe and raise them, you know, as her own to protect them. But the trouble started when she tried to feed the kittens with bottles of milk, and immediately the kittens tore the bottles apart and like ripped them to shreds. And as she was trying to feed them, she was getting scratched and she was getting bitten, and her daughter and her sister stepped in to try to help. And by the time it was done, everybody's arms and hands were this just kind of a bloody mess. And they put the kittens back in the cage, and they decided, we're not going to be able to care for these. These are the wildest cats we've ever seen. And so they called animal control, and when animal control showed up, they quickly were able to point out, lady, you've adopted two bobcats, you know, like these are not domestic house cats that you've picked up. And to make matters worse, she lied to the officers about where she found the kittens, and she ended up having criminal charges for disturbing wildlife pressed against her. And by the time she paid her fine and medical bills and all of that, she learned this lesson the hard way. You know, I mean, just man, I felt sorry for her. But sometimes we're all like that. You know, sometimes that's just kind of the way we have to process life and figure things out, right? I can remember every single time that I left my parents' house to drive to college, to make that 6-hour drive out to West Texas. Every time I would leave, my dad would stand out in the driveway, and after we hugged each other goodbye and all of that kind of stuff, he would look at me as I was just about to close the door, and he would say, hey, remember the C word. Now, you might think that my dad was saying, remember, you're a Christian. That was not it. You might think he was saying, don't forget to crush your finals, you know, but that was not it either. What he was telling me was, don't forget, his C word was cushion. He said, don't forget to leave a huge cushion between you and all the other vehicles on the road. Okay, he was saying, I want you to leave a big cushion of space in front of your vehicle and to the sides of your vehicle. Don't pass people when it's not safe. Don't tailgate people on the highway. Leave plenty of room. That was his mantra every time I left. Hey, C word. So my sophomore year of college, when I borrowed a friend's truck to move some stuff, and I wasn't used to that vehicle and I wasn't paying close enough attention, and I rear-ended another friend's Mustang, you know the first thing I thought of, right? The C word. Collision insurance. Like, that was, you know, like, yes, that's what I need. No, then I remembered my dad's C word, and I thought about how many times he had reminded me and how this was one of those lessons that I had to learn the hard way. Now, by now, you've figured out, you already know that life is made up of a series of learning opportunities, right? And every once in a while, once in a blue moon, you can learn what you need to learn by studying in a book. But more often than not, we learn the lessons that we need in this life by giving it a try and watching the results, right? And autopsying what happened, paying attention to the results of our decision. It's why in high school science classes we have lab assignments and experiments and dissections and field trips. Because you need to do hands-on. You need to see it in action. You need to watch what happens when you add a certain element or a certain amount of heat or something like that. It's why so many job training programs require internships and apprenticeships and residencies. Because you need to have some hands-on opportunities to watch and see what happens. Because we've all got so much to learn. We all have so much that we still need to understand, and there are just some lessons that just can't be explained. They have to be experienced. They have to give us an opportunity to experiment a little bit. And I wonder if you've noticed that faith works like that most of the time. I wonder if you've noticed in your own experience with spirituality, in your own experience with trying to connect with the divine, I wonder if you've noticed that faith can't just be explained. It has to be experienced. You have to have some time to experiment, because the truth is that faith in God does not just come naturally. It's not just something that somebody else can hand to you. Now, I know that in a crowd this big, we have just a myriad of different life experiences, and it may be, maybe your story is different. Maybe your life story has always included a belief in God. Maybe you grew up in an environment, in a family, in a system where faith in God's existence was assumed and it was passed down, and you just never had any trouble believing that God was real. Or maybe your story is that you discovered belief in God somewhere along the way through a series of life experiences. Maybe you found your way into a Bible study or a church gathering or a friendship with somebody who revealed to you some of their experience with God. Maybe you tried on some other worldviews and some other philosophies and then discovered that the story of Jesus and God planted that seed in your heart, that story in your heart, and it started to grow. And maybe that's your story. Or maybe your story is that faith is still in its first chapter for you. Maybe you're not sure about this whole God thing at this point, but you're experimenting. You're investigating. You're testing it out to see if there's any truth in it. And no matter where you are on the spectrum, no matter where you are in your journey, no matter what your story has looked like to this point, I want you to know I'm really glad you're here. And I also want you to know that no matter what your story or background with belief in God's existence, no matter what that story has looked like, none of us, not a single person in here, has completely and totally trusted God with every part of our hearts and our minds and our lives quite yet, okay? None of us has reached that point. It's a journey. It's an ongoing process. And what we're doing is we're learning to trust God with the future based on our experience with God in the past and in the present, okay? This is how this works. This is how this has always worked. And I don't have time this morning to rehearse so many of the examples from the Old Testament and different portions of the narrative of God's people, but this is always how it has worked. We learn to trust God for the future based on our experience, our experiments with Him in the past. We are all experimenting with faith, right? You agree with that? The beautiful truth, though, the beautiful truth and the good news I have to share with you this morning is that God keeps inviting us to keep trying. That God keeps inviting us to the experiment, keeps inviting us to experience Him again. Now, for the past few weeks, we've been taking a look and a journey together through the writings of Jesus' life that are recorded in the New Testament book of Matthew. And we've heard some of the story of His birth and a little bit about His early life. We've heard about His early days of His ministry, and we've heard about some of His teachings. But today, I want to show you some moments in Jesus' life when He invited His followers to experiment with their faith. These are stories when Jesus challenged His closest friends, His disciples, to lean in to what they had already experienced on the faith journey, to lean in to their experience with Him, and then to take it one step further. And so I want to invite you, if you would, to grab your Bible or use the app on your phone. The Heritage app will take you right there, or you can follow along on the screens together, and we're going to be in Matthew chapter 14 this morning. Now, Matthew 14, I got to tell you, it starts with a grisly story about the execution of John the Baptist. And you may remember from our study a few weeks ago that John was a relative of Jesus, something like a cousin or a second cousin most likely, and that John had baptized Jesus and he had preached about the arrival of Jesus. He and Jesus had this meaningful connection. And in this chapter, John is executed, or we get the report about John being executed by King Herod, who happens to be the son of the King Herod who had ordered the execution of all the baby boys in Bethlehem trying to execute Jesus. And so John and Jesus and their lives and their mission, it's very intertwined. They're very connected and they have a special relationship. And the news of John's death was difficult for Jesus to hear, we have to imagine. And so in chapter 14, verse 13, it says, when Jesus heard what had happened, when he heard about what had happened to John, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. He needed a minute, all right? Gets in the boat by himself, and he starts heading across the lake, the Sea of Galilee, which is really kind of a glorified lake. It's not all that big. He starts heading across the water to a place where he can be by himself. But Matthew tells us that hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. Now, don't think that they just waded off into the water following him directly, but the lake is small enough that they can see where he's going, and they're kind of walking their way around, running their way around the rim of the lake, following and trying to guess where he's going to stop. And it says, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them, and he healed they're sick. Now, he's trying to get a little time alone, probably to grieve and reflect and pray, but the crowds are chasing after him, and Jesus, full of compassion. Don't miss that. That may be the most important set of words we read here this morning, even though it's not the focus of this lesson. Jesus was full of compassion. This is his instinctive response. And he changed his plans, and he spent the day tending to these folks. He was healing people. He was caring for people. He was encouraging people. And it went on all day long. And it's starting to get late. And verse 15 says, as evening approached, the disciples, these are the people who are closest to Jesus, his inner circle, 12 people who follow him where he goes, they assist in his ministry, they are joining him in ministry. The disciples came to him and said, hey, we're kind of out in the middle of nowhere here. This is a remote place. It's already getting late. Why don't you tell the crowds to go ahead and go, send the crowds away so that they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food? And Jesus replies to the disciples. He says, they do not need to go away. You give them something to eat. All right, now you got to put yourself in their shoes here for a minute. Anyone who's ever planned a meal for a big family holiday gathering or planned the menu for a camping trip, you know what a big project it is to feed large groups of people. You need budget money. You need planning time. You need preparation time. And so Jesus' instructions here, they're not only vague, but if you only heard this episode, they would seem really far-fetched, right? These people don't need to go. You handle it. You give them something to eat. Seems like a tall order. What you may or may not remember, though, is that Jesus has been in the process of empowering his disciples to do things that seemed otherwise impossible. If you turn your Bible back just a few pages in Matthew to chapter 10, verse 1 tells us that Jesus gave his 12 disciples authority to drive out impure spirits and to heal every disease and sickness. All right? 4 chapters ago, Jesus has empowered his disciples with ability that they didn't have before, authority that they didn't have before, and then he sent them out on a little mission trip, a little mini trip, and said, go out and do some of the work that you've seen me doing. That was chapters ago. He hadn't just invited them to follow in his ministry, he had enabled them. empowered them to share God's power the way that he was sharing God's power. He equipped his disciples with spiritual power that they could use to help other people, and they'd already gone out and done it. They'd already gone out and used that power to heal people. And so when Jesus says, you give them something to eat, he's inviting them to take a next step. He's inviting them, based on their past experience with him, based on what they already know, based on what they have learned just by watching him show compassion and love and pour out the gift of God, the power of God for the sake of people who are suffering. He's inviting them to take that knowledge and to take that experience and take a next step in the faith that's already growing inside of them. And they missed it. They didn't figure it out. Verse 17, they replied to him, we have here only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. And they didn't see how that could do anything to feed that crowd. But here's what happens. Verse 18, Jesus says, bring them here to me. Bring me the 5 loaves of bread and the 2 fish. And he directed the people, the crowd of people, to sit down on the grass. And he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and he looked up to heaven, and he gave thanks, and he broke the loaves, and then he gave them to the 12 disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people, started passing it out. And then verse 20, as if this is just totally normal, says, they all ate, and they were all satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. And the number of those who ate was about 5,000 men, not including the women and children. All right, now this is remarkable. An incredible story of God's power and God's provision. Jesus fed what was likely a crowd of 10,000 or more people when you include all of the women and children that weren't included in Matthew's count. And he fed them with basically what amounted to a sack lunch. By any measure, this was a miracle, and there's a reason that this story is included in all 4 of the gospel accounts, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. But Jesus' instruction to the disciples, what he encouraged or instructed his followers to do, implies that they should not have been shocked, that they should not have been surprised. He wanted them to take a next step in their faith and use their spiritual resources to help people around them who were in need. This is what he wanted them to do. You give them something to eat. But they failed the test. Jesus, though, was patient, full of compassion. He was patient. He showed them what to do. He showed them how. He took the bread. He looked up to heaven. He thanked God for it. He started distributing it to the disciples. The disciples started distributing it to the crowd, and it went far enough that everybody got a doggy bag to take home. And that leads right into the next story. Matthew says, immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. And after he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. He's getting that alone time there for a few minutes. It says, later that night, he was there alone. He was by himself, and the boat was already a considerable distance away from land, and it was being buffeted. It was being assaulted by the waves because of the wind that was blowing against it. And shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake, not in the lake, but specifically on the lake. Now, this is a big deal, right? I mean, here these guys are out in the middle of the lake in the dark. They're paddling against strong wind and tall waves. There's no artificial light. Remember this. There's no lights that they can see over on the shoreline to show them where they're going. They don't have any lights on the boat. They're maybe following the stars, maybe they can see the moon. And suddenly, in what little bit of natural light there is, they see the figure of a man walking on the water. And so it's pretty understandable when verse 26 says, the disciples saw him walking on the lake and they were terrified. It's a ghost, they said, and they cried out in fear. But what you may not know, or what you may not remember, is that Jesus has already been teaching his disciples about his power over the elements. He's already been teaching them that they're not afraid, they don't have to be afraid, even when they're out in the middle of the big scary sea and the wind and the waves are against them. If you turn your Bible back just a few chapters earlier in Matthew, in chapter 8, you find a story where Jesus is riding in the boat with these same disciples and a big storm blows up and Jesus calms the wind and calms the wave with just a single sentence. They had seen his power. They knew something about what he was capable of. And in this story, in chapter 14, he's inviting them to take the next step. He's inviting them to a next step in their faith journey when they start to assume that they're not alone, because he's proven to them in the past that they're not alone. He's inviting them to take a next step, and they missed it. They were scared, and they screamed. And Jesus, patient, full of compassion, immediately said to them, "Take courage. It is I. It's me." Or maybe it's important to tell you that the language here says, "Take courage. I am." And this is a reminder of the identity of God. This is a reminder of who God has always described himself as to the people that he was leading. Jesus out on the water says, "Take courage. I am. It's me. Don't be afraid." And right after that, Matthew tells this fantastic story about one of the disciples, Peter, who works up his courage and he asks Jesus to invite him, to empower him to step out of the boat and to walk on the water too. And Jesus says, "By all means, come on." And then Peter takes a few successful steps walking on the water, and then he gets scared again and he begins to sink, and Jesus takes him by the hand and pulls him into the boat. And maybe you missed this part last time you read it. As soon as they get back in the boat, the wind dies down and the waves get calm. And everybody else in the boat says, "Did you see that? Whoa!" And they worshiped. And the disciples' faith grew a little bit that night. Grew a little bit so that hopefully the next time that they were invited to lean into their faith, they would respond not with fear, but with a trust, an assurance, a faith that they were not alone. You see the pattern? You see the pattern that's developing in this story. You see the pattern that's developing in the entire narrative that Matthew has been telling us. We've heard about the birth. We've heard about the early ministry. We've heard the Sermon on the Mount, the important teachings in Matthew 5 through 7. But we're seeing these stepping stones along the path. We're seeing these moments, the time when he was in the boat and he calmed the storm. We're seeing these moments when he empowered his disciples and said, "This same power that I have been displaying can also be conveyed to the world through you. Here, you go with my authority and you heal people." We're seeing these stepping stones along the journey, and then these moments when Jesus is saying, "Okay, everything we've been doing in the past, everything I've been saying to you, everything that I have been revealing about the coming of the kingdom of heaven," he says, "This is the next step. You give them something to eat. You don't be afraid. This is the next step." He's taken his disciples on a journey. It's a journey of watching him trust God, watching him use God's power to help other people. And then after they watch him do it, the idea is that they would learn to trust God's power for their own life and for their own ministry. But if the plan was going to work, if the plan had any chance of success, the disciples had to do two things, right? Number one, they had to pay attention. And number two, they had to step forward. They had to take a next step in their own journey with Christ. If they were going to have any chance of comprehending and understanding what Jesus was trying to give to them, they had to pay attention. They had to be looking at the history of their own experience with God, looking at the history and the moments and the episodes of their story with Jesus, and they had to be asking themselves, I was just out here fishing and this guy came and walked up and said, follow me. What was that about? All of that stuff I heard him say when he was sitting on the other side of that mountain, it was like teaching I'd never heard before, but boy, it kind of rang true in my heart and it seemed to make sense. What was that about? I remember that night when we were in the boat and the storm was going crazy and we all thought we were going to die and we'd thrown all of our luggage overboard and all we could do was just hope that Jesus would wake up and be scared with us. And he woke up and he said, peace be still. And the storm went away. I remember that night. I remember when he said, you now have the authority to go and heal people the way that I've been healing people. And we went out and we did it. And all of the stories that we brought back, all of the moments that we came back telling about what God had done through us, I remember all of that. And what they were supposed to do was pay attention to their history, pay attention to their past with God, and then take a step forward into the future, to trust God with the future. And I wonder how I would have done. I don't know that it would have been any better. Probably would have been a whole lot worse, trying to logic my way through stuff. Well, you know, Jesus, if we divide 5 loaves of bread by 10,000 people, then I might be able to give everybody. That's ridiculous. But Jesus is taking his followers on a journey. I want you to turn the page and go forward one more to Matthew 15. I mean, it's just a few verses later, not even an entire chapter. We come to chapter 15, verse 29, and there's another teaching moment. This time they happen to be in Gentile territory. They're on the other side of the lake, and they're hanging out with people who are not part of the nation of Israel, part of the Jews. Hanging out in Gentile territory, it says, Jesus left there, he went along the Sea of Galilee, he went up on a mountainside and he sat down and great crowds came to him. This is a totally different crowd of people. Great crowds came to him, bringing their lame and their blind and the crippled and the mute and many others, and they laid him at his feet and he healed them. And you're thinking to yourself, I've heard this story before. I mean, this is sounding familiar. Verse 32, Jesus called his disciples. Now I'm going to challenge you, don't read ahead, okay? Verse 32, Jesus called his disciples to him and said, I have compassion for these people. We've heard this before, right? I have compassion for these people. They've already been with me for 3 days and they've had nothing to eat. But I don't want to send them away hungry or they may collapse on the way. And so at this point, given the history, given their experiences, given their background, what do you expect is going to happen at this moment? Like, what are you hoping is going to happen at this moment? You know, like, Philip is going to be like, okay, I get it. It's our turn, right? Like, we're supposed to do something about it. Judas puts his little abacus away. He's like, that's not how we do it. It's not math. It's bigger than that. What do you think Jesus is hoping the disciples will do? I think he's hoping that they would take what bread they had, look up to heaven, thank God for it, and start passing it out. Instead, verse 33, the disciples answered, where could we get enough bread in a remote place like this to feed such a crowd? Jesus, what are you talking about? What could we possibly do at a moment like this? I mean, there's no McDonald's, there's no grocery store, there's nothing out here. There's not anything we can do. They missed it. But here's what I want you to watch. I want you to notice how compassionate and patient Jesus is. How many loaves do you have? Jesus asked. 7, they replied, and a few small fish, more than last time. And so he told the crowd to sit down. on the ground, and he took the 7 loaves and the fish, and when he had given thanks, he broke it, and he gave them to the disciples, and they in turn gave those to the people. You've heard this story before. They all ate, and everybody was satisfied, and afterwards the disciples picked up 7 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over, and the number of those who ate was 4,000 men, besides the women and children. Jesus was patient. He was compassionate. He loved the crowd. He took care of them. But this was another teaching moment for the disciples. This was another teaching moment for the ones who had been with him in chapter 8 and chapter 10 and chapter 14. And he gave them another chance. And spoiler alert, he kept giving them another chance. Kept giving them another chance until later on, much further down the road in the story, when we get into the book of Acts, you're going to hear stories about them going out and doing the very kinds of things that they saw Jesus doing. And I wonder about the chances that Jesus is offering to you and to me to take a next step. I wonder if we've considered, based on our history, based on our past with God, based on the experience and the experiments that we have already run with God, based on all of the times that we've seen Him come through, all of the times that we've seen Him provide, all of the times that we've seen Him be enough, I wonder, when you add all of that up, what's the next step? And have you thought about it? And are you going to take it? Or are you going to miss it? You know, for a long time, if you've been connected with church or had a Bible or heard anything about the message of Jesus, for a long time, we've heard this message that says, pray for your enemies. Love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you, right? I mean, for a long time, we have known that that's what Jesus is, one of the steps that He's calling us to take. And for a long time, we've tested it and we've said, you know what? What if I get revenge on my enemies instead? And it didn't work out well. And we've tried cutting off relationship with people, and it hurt, and it didn't work out well. We've tried all these different experiments, and we have seen what it looks like when people reconcile and make peace with one another. And I wonder if we're going to take God at His word and take that next step based on the history and the experience that we have seeing His word work the way it is promised to work. You know, for a long time, we've been listening to a message that says every time God shows up and interacts with people, what's He say first? Do not be afraid, right? And we've heard this message over and over where Jesus says, you don't have to spend your life worrying, because guess what? God is taking care of His creation. He takes care of the birds. He takes care of the flowers. He takes care of the grass. He makes sure that the good people and the not so good people still get rain enough so that they can grow a crop. He's working on all of this stuff. You don't have to worry about it. And we've tried the other way, right? We've experimented with it. We've tried staying up all night. We've tried wringing our hands. We've tried posting about it on social media, about how angry we are, or how nervous we are, or about how we need a private prayer request, you know, not going to tell you what it is, but please pray about it. I don't know. We've tried all that stuff, and I wonder, based on our experience, based on our history, are we going to take that step that says, I'm going to trust God when He says I don't have to be afraid. I can do this all day. I won't. I wonder about all of the instructions that God's given us about not going through life alone, about fellowshipping with other people, about helping carry the burdens of other people. And we've tried it by ourselves, and we've tried doing it solo in our way and all that. And I wonder if we're going to take that next step and connect. I wonder, every time we've heard God say that we should put Him first in our finances and trust Him with our resources and trust Him to take care of us and to provide for us better than we can provide for ourselves. And we've sure tried it the other way. And I wonder if we're going to take the next step. I wonder if you're interested in the next step. I hope you are. Here's what I do know, though. Jesus is going to keep on inviting you. He's going to keep on pleading with you. He's going to keep on being present in your life and showing you what He does and showing you how much He cares and showing you how relentless His pursuit of you is. He's going to keep inviting you and keep giving you more chances to take a step forward.